as Wood springs into action, goes wide of the crease. Bowling! And England have regained the Ashes, and Lyon's stumps are shattered. England are in little groups, jumping up and down. They've won by an innings and 78 runs.
The Radio Today programme, with Broadcast Bionics, creators of Phonebox and Oasis. Welcome to the Social Studio.
You found the Radio Today programme, the weekly podcast from Radio Today. I'm Trevor Dan, and I can't believe how lucky I am. I'm in the inner sanctum. I'm in the Test Match Special box at Trent Bridge. England have just won the Ashes, and I'm with Adam Mountford, who has the job I most want in the whole of broadcasting. He's the producer of Test Match Special. Adam, this must be the most exciting thing of all when England have just won the Ashes, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's funny. I was reflecting that the first Ashes I worked on in England was 2005, which was obviously a fantastic series. But I remember at lunchtime, Oval 2005, when things weren't going that well, actually, for England. They just lost those wickets and Brett Lee was steaming in and Kevin Peterson was dropped, etc., etc. And I'm thinking, gosh, you know, I'm not sure England are going to win the Ashes in my lifetime again, because we'd waited 18 years. And now I've been so, so privileged to have worked on five England Ashes wins now with what's happened at Trent Bridge. So I'm incredibly fortunate. I have the best seat in the house. I get to listen to my favourite radio programme. I get to watch moments of cricket history, and with a constant supply of cake. There can be no better job.
Let me ask you a bit about what makes it such a great heritage radio show. Because on the face of it, not a lot happens for hours on end. And if you pitched an idea like this to a modern programmer, I suspect they'd say, no, I don't think that'll work, Adam. And yet it gloriously does. So why?
It's a mix of personalities. It's a mix of voices, a mix of backgrounds, a mix of eras in which people played. But it's frankly, it's mates chatting about cricket. I always think it's a bit like the experience of watching cricket. What I loved about cricket, which is that you go along in the crowd, and when the cricket's exciting, like it was on the last day of the Ashes, you don't miss a ball. You don't want to miss a moment. You're absolutely locked in. At that point, I hope our commentary's at its height, and we've got some of the, I think, the finest broadcasters, not just cricket commentators, but some of the finest broadcasters in the country on Test Match Special. But there are moments, as we know, in a Test Match where it drifts. I mean, less so these days. They're so quick, these Test Matches. But, of course, over 5 days, as they should be, there are moments when things drift, and that's when I think the entertainment comes in, when the characters come through, and you need that. And it's a bit like when you're in the crowd. That's the moment you broke open another can of beer and chat with your mates about what happened in the game last week or what you watched on the telly, etc. And that, I think, is where it happens. And also, it's a bit of a family as well, I think. Everyone plays a different role within that family. So you've got, you know, Geoffrey Boycott's probably the grumpy old uncle in the corner who watched things for many years. And then you've got the naughty schoolboy in Phil Tufnell. And now Graham Swan, obviously straight from the team. You know, all these different personalities and characters. And obviously Jonathan Agnew's your head boy, you know, leading the team. You know, it's that sort of family. And I think people lock into the family. Of course, the family gets new members every so often. As say, Graham Swan's come in last couple of years.
Well, I was going to ask you about this, actually, Adam, because I think this is a really important thing. Because a lot of us in broadcasting wrestle with the problem of how do we keep our programme fresh? How do we bring in new people? How do we stop everything we do looking or sounding stale? You've managed to do that. I mean, you got a little bit of pushback, didn't you, in your very early days from, hey, he's trying to turn it into some kind of, you know, kidsy, laddish, showbiz thing. But actually, you've managed to make it, as you say, a big family from the old to the young.
Yeah, I think it's one of the great challenges of producing Test Match Special. One of the great joys is that people really, really care about what you do. And that's brilliant that you do something that people really care and love. But inevitably, that comes with challenges because people, they feel they own it. Of course they do. They feel, as I said, the family thing, it's part of their family. And if you take someone away from the family, it's like a bereavement. Of course it is. So you make changes with an awful lot of thought behind what they are. And that's what I did. And inevitably, I think when I took over, there aren't many people who do a job after someone's done it for 34 years. And that's what Peter Bax did, a fantastic job. And taking over from him, I quite rightly, there was a little bit of suspicion, I'm sure, among some listeners, you know, new person comes in, what are they going to do? And you know, there were a few bits that happened, obviously, at the start in terms of changes. But I think, for me, it was just important to just slightly refresh the mix of voices on the programme. I mean, actually, there's been very few changes, really. But I just think every so often, you just need to have just a fresh perspective.
What makes a great Test match special speaker. And I'm saying speaker rather than commentator, because some of them do commentating, some of them do analysis. But really what they do is they just chat, don't they?
Connection with the audience. You know, that, what I love about radio is that, that it's in your ear, it's your friend, it's the closest thing to you. That's the joy of radio for me. And if you've got commentators who can bring the excitement of a Test match, but bring it with warmth and the connection, that's the key thing. And, you know, it's nice to be friendly and everything else, but quite clear, sometimes within a match there's tension, sometimes there's disagreements, that's fine. Journalistically, we've got to be really strong on TMS. We've got to make sure that when a bad shot's played, we say it's a bad shot. We're not going to say he'll be disappointed with that all the time. You know, you need people to explain why a shot's been made, hopefully with constructive criticism. But if you can bring the expertise, but the warmth and the humour, I think that's the absolute key.
And what's your role in terms of making the broadcasters better? You know, when you've got a Swanee, for instance, who's just arrived, how much work do you do with him to make him into a broadcaster without stopping him being Graham Swan?
Yeah, the most important thing, my job, is to create an environment for people to perform at their best. I would not tell Jonathan Agnew what to say on the radio. He's been doing it for 25 years and he's a consummate professional, he's brilliant. I might say to him, do you know, I think it might be interesting to talk about this area, if you think that's good. But with a newer member like Graham Swan, obviously he's great, he takes feedback brilliant, and I might just say to him, you know, that was, it was a good example the other day. We wanted him to take us into the dressing room. That's where a more current player does help. I want you to take us into what it's like here at Trent Bridges' home ground when they walk up, when Stuart Broad walked off the field, 8 for 15, what does he do? And he beautifully described, you know, he goes at the steps and he sees the pictures of these former players, whatever else. And he took us into the dressing room and I said, that was perfect. So you're looking to pick these things out. I say to a new summariser, your most important job is this. Tell us something we don't know. That's your job. You know, I love cricket. I watch cricket all the time, but I've not been out there. I've not had the pressure to play. Tell us what it's like. Really tell us what it's like. Whether it's who's got the smelliest socks in the dressing room or why he's bowling that particular delivery. I don't care what element it is, but tell us something we don't know. And that's certainly the feedback you can give. And when it comes to a ball-by-ball commentator, you know, there are certain disciplines that you encourage, not missing a ball, the most important thing, letting it breathe, not chatting too much all the time. And new commentators are nervous and everything else. And you, but the most important thing is just creating that relaxed environment and they can do their best.
Now, I've said it's the most perfect job in British radio, and I think it is, but I guess there are times when it isn't. And I'm wondering about those cold January days when you've got to, you know, wave goodbye to the family and get on the plane and go away to the West Indies for 8 weeks or something. You know, the demands on you around the clock, around the year, must be extraordinary.
Yeah, you're right. It's a great privilege to do this job. It's a great privilege to follow the England team. And look, I get the chance to travel to some amazing countries in the world. But you're right, I've got two young children, a 10-year-old and a 5-year-old, and I worked out that my daughter is 10. It's only the second time I've been at home for the run-up to Christmas and Christmas, for the nativity plays and the school, whatever else. But, you know, I am also unbelievably fortunate to do what I do. But you're right, of course it is. It is difficult. There's a story of one of our commentators who had two young kids and they both ran when the taxi took him to the airport. They were running after the taxi in tears. And that's horrible to deal with. You know, and you're absolutely right. And look, there are some grounds that are difficult to work in around the world. Some facilities are difficult. Sometimes when I work abroad, I don't just produce the programme, I also engineer the programme. I also often have to do some of the broadcasting, and inevitably that comes with challenges in some part of the world.
I've heard you in India, I've heard Agas in India, yeah, talking about effectively hanging on to a telegraph pole try to broadcast.
Oh, yeah, my first outside broadcast in Sri Lanka, we did it on a satellite in the jungle, and the only way I could get a signal was literally by holding this small satellite at a certain angle through the broadcast. So I'm holding it. And I'm wearing shorts because we're in the jungle. It's now 100 and something degrees. And there are floodlights. So unsurprisingly, there are thousands upon thousands of bugs who come down attracted by the light. And I'm conscious that I've got my both hands on the satellite. And these bugs are biting my legs to smithereens. And I can't move because I've got to hold the satellite to keep us on the air. And I'm thinking, this wasn't quite the vision of being the TMS producer abroad. I assumed it was Panama hats and, you know, a pina colada, whatever it might be, not in the jungle holding a satellite. But look, you know, there, of course there are challenges to that. There absolutely are. But the joy and the satisfaction you get when you've got a programme on the air in a difficult place And the wonderful reaction you get from the audience, who love to be taken in the cold of a winter down under or to Sri Lanka or to India or whatever it might be, and they absolutely adore it, and you know you've played a part in bringing that magic to them.
I'm really interested in what you just said about engineering as well as producing, because your role is not like a sort of director wandering around saying, OK, your turn now, chaps. You're actually getting your hands dirty, really, aren't you, with the gear. What sort of training did you have for that? You know, what's your background?
Local radio, really, was the absolute key for me. Well, university radio first. I did it when I was at Warwick University, W963, as it was called then, where Simon Mayo and Stephen Merchant and various other people learnt their trade as well. Then did local radio in Coventry and then Birmingham at WM. And it was fantastic. And, you know, local radio is absolutely the best breeding ground, because you've got to do everything. You've got to broadcast, you've got to do the engineering, you've got to make the packages, you know, you do everything. And that is absolutely key to learning your trade, learning your craft. And for me, that was absolutely perfect, because it meant that when I got to do it here for Test Match Special, nothing fazed you. You know, you had to get on the air, and sometimes you have to broadcast when someone's ill in India or something might, you know, something that might be the case. And that for me was it took the pressure, I think, off the fact that you've done it at local radio. But there's actually very little formal training really for this sort of job. You know, I remember telling someone who was just about to go and do a one day series in India, because I wasn't available to do it, and I was trying to explain how it works. And I thought, actually, it's only when you get to Cuttack or Indore and you arrive at a ground and you're not quite sure where you're broadcasting or where the lines are, it's almost impossible to teach someone how to do it. You've got to experience it. So, yeah, I mean, you learn on the job, a lot of it.
Now, one thing that has really changed since you took it over is it is no longer a radio show only. I mean, we talk endlessly, don't we, about multi-platform, but your podcast is huge. You know, we've had the pint-sized Ashes this year. How big is the team now that is doing Test Match Special across all those platforms?
Yeah, certainly when it comes to like an Ashes in England, it's by far a bigger team than I'd normally have. And when I'm abroad, it's a very small team, because I'm basically it when it comes to the production team. But here, I'm very fortunate. I have Henny Moran, who's a brilliant cricket organiser who works with me. We have, for example, Ashes Test Match, we have someone looking after Five Live. We have someone looking after some of the social media that we do. But I think what the joy of what we have now with particularly social media and podcasts and everything else is an extension of the TMS experience, and the fact that you can wake up with Aggers on Twitter, you know what he's doing in the morning, and you follow him to the ground, and you might look on what he's doing on Periscope.
There's a real danger that you end up thinking these people are your friends. And yet then you meet them and they go, who the hell are you?
That is disturbing. But you're absolutely right. You can, like the Truman Show, you know, you can follow them all through their lives. But I think people like that because it's that family, isn't it? Again, you can connect to them, and then they're off the air, and then we're doing bits on video, and then later on they'll be appearing. I'm sure Aggers will be on Twitter again later on, and you know, then the podcast will be available, extending all that. Absolutely, absolutely. But yeah, I mean, the team is, for an Ashes, about as large as it can get, because you've also got BBC TV involved and that sort of thing. But actually, for the amount of output that you do, we try to be as economical with people as you can, because quite rightly, you can't fill these places with lots and lots of people, and we all multi-skill. That's the most important about BBC now, which has changed from when I started. You know, you've got to do everything. You've got to be able to do social media, you've got to be able to do online, you've got to be able to do radio, TV and everything, and that is
absolutely
vital.
You do some broadcasting, don't you?
You're often
the reporter.
Yeah, absolutely. So you've got to do some broadcasting. I started doing some TV filming. So at one point in the West Indies last tour, I was producing broadcasting, and at one point I was also doing the interview after play and filming it at the same time. So in one hand I've got the little camera, the other hand I've got the radio microphone, I've got the phone in my pocket in case the radio program goes off air, and you're filming that, dashing back and sending the film. But it's a great, I mean, it, you know, it's a bit hairy, but it's great. So yeah, I'm fortunate in this country, obviously, with, you know, there's a bit more personnel available, but when you're abroad, you know, we get as much as possible out of the number of people we have.
Now, music DJs love to hang out with bands, don't they? They love to get in dressing rooms and go to after-show parties. Do you get to hang out with the cricketers?
A little bit. I mean, certainly on tour you do. We're often in the same hotels and you have a drink at the bar. And look, I'm a cricket fan. And for me, the chance to, you know, have a drink with Alastair Cook or, you know, or even Graham Swan now, is obviously a member of our team, etc. You know, these are people I grew up watching, you know, and that's the joy of being in with the commentary team, is that these people are my heroes watching, and now I get to work with them. But certainly with the players, yeah, a little bit, you know, you do get, possibly less than perhaps journalists of the past, where they travel together the whole time, and it was a bit more relaxed relationship between journalists and players. But certainly, yeah, you do. And certainly my job as well, what's useful to do is to get to know players as to who are potential broadcasters. So Graham Swann's a good example. I got to know him when he was playing, and he obviously wanted to do media. And I got the impression that he'd be good at it because he was such a good talker. And we talked about it when he was playing. So actually, he announced his retirement, and I was having dinner with him the night afterwards, talking about what he could do with us. And that helps. So certainly when it comes to players who might want to get the media, socialising with them can help, yeah.
Now, what we're doing here, Adam, is we're sort of replicating View from the Boundary, which is a feature that you do during lunch on Test Match Special, where you get the oddest of people to come and talk not just about cricket, but about themselves. And they're often very revealing. I think some of the interviews that Agus does in View from the Boundary are as good as really deep forensic interviews that you hear on Radio 4. It's as though people feel that they can be honest and open in this environment.
Well, I think there's actually very few half-hour-long interviews left now, actually, in any format. These days, it's all short interviews, and that's great. But you're right; it's a great chance. And what I think you always get with a View from the Boundary is that wonderful juxtaposition where Agus wants to talk to, I don't know, David Cameron about being the Prime Minister, and David Cameron wants to talk about batting with Geoffrey Boycott. You know, they all want to talk. They want to talk about cricket. We want to talk about their other lives. But yeah, I mean, I'm great fortune to meet a realm of people from sport, music, politics, whatever.
Is it easy to persuade them to come on? I bet it is.
Very few people. They normally come to us, to be honest with you. Very, very few people turn you down. I mean, sometimes dates are difficult. So we had Sam Mendes, the James Bond director, the other game, and it was difficult getting him because he's directing a James Bond film. But, you know, frankly, very, very few people turn it down. And you know, it is one of my favourite slots because you get to meet people who are fascinating, hear about their lives, and they're all united by a love of cricket. And that is just wonderful, because that's what excited me growing up. And it's wonderful to hear these people with the same sort of experiences.
OK, last thing, because they're taking the studio apart around us. How do you work out who's going to be on when? Because you're sort of casting the show as it runs. And I'm just wondering if you ever have issues about, well, Geoffrey was due here 15 minutes ago, but he hasn't turned up. You know, I'd love you to talk about how you choreograph the show.
Depends. If a commentator annoys me, I put them on with Geoffrey quite a lot. No. It's what you're absolutely right. It's a bit like that. You try and make sure everyone gets a mix of different people through in the day, so that different partnerships are together. But there are some people who work particularly well together. I mean, a good example: Henry Blofeld and Phil Tufnell. Totally different. Old Etonian, naughty schoolboy, although he did go to private school briefly, did Tuffers. But, you know, completely different personality, different voices, different backgrounds, and they've got a wonderful contrast and a wonderful relationship between them. So they're a good combination. But generally, people work together. Vic Marks, one of our glorious summarisers, works brilliantly with Agus. They've worked together for years. They're great friends. They've got great rapport together. But yeah, if you in a perfect mix of team for me, you've got different accents, different backgrounds, and different experiences of play. And these days, of course, one of the other great things I've been able to bring in is someone like Alison Mitchell or Isha Guha or Ebony Rainford-Brent. And that, I think, has changed the dynamic again. And quite rightly, it has done, because these excellent female broadcasters, they're totally on merit, and they're because they played the game or they've been an excellent broadcaster like Alison, and they just add to the mix. They add to that richness that Test Match Special can bring.
Last question. What else do you listen to on the radio?
I like Mayo and Kermode on 5 Live because I think it's a film. It's Test Match Special as a film show. I think, and actually, we have a good relationship with them. I think Twitter, Wittertainment as they are. I think we're sort of the cricket version of that. I think that's probably one of my favourites. Danny Baker's a genius. You know, I've listened to him for years. I think he does phone-in shows better than anyone ever can do. I mean, 5. I'm a big sports fan generally, so obviously, you know, a lot of the other sport. I love our golf coverage that BBC do. But I've got one guilty pleasure. And I'm not frightened to admit this. You can't beat a musical. Elaine Page on Sunday. Wonderful programme. You know, I love a bit of a musical on Sunday with the family. We're singing along to the show tunes. Can't beat it.
We forgive you. Adam Mountford, thank you so much for having me at Test Match Special. It's been a glorious moment for me. This is the Radio Today programme. I'm Trevor Dan. Here is Roy Martin with some news.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics.
Thank you, Trevor. This week, the BBC iPlayer for Radio has hit 1 million downloads just weeks after the facility was launched. top downloaded programmes were Radio 4 Dramas, Radio 1 Summer Mixes and, surprise, surprise, The Archers. Celador has decided not to renew contracts to stay on DAB radio multiplexes in Southampton and Bristol, with the two Sam FM stations now on FM only. The company also decided not to reply to Radio Today when we asked them why. And Jeremy Vine is to appear on Strictly Come Dancing this year. The Radio 2 presenter was revealed on the Chris Evans Breakfast Show on Radio 2. And we'll look forward to keeping you updated with his progress, no doubt. That's the latest from radiotoday.co.uk. I'm Roy Martin.
Broadcast Bionics, creators of Phonebox and Oasis, offer you elegantly integrated products and intelligent one-stop shopping for all your studio needs. Discover a full range of innovative studio products. Play out by Wide Orbit, Music Master Scheduling, Stirlitz, Newsboss, Larvo, Telos, Axia, Omnia, Digigram and Commotion. Visit bionics.co.uk today.
Radio. We start looking back to this week 3 years ago, and Radio 1 declares it's had enough of jingles.
A lot of stations don't use jingles at all, but I really think they're making a slight mistake here. I think the singing jingles are just fantastic. They just give that station that fresh sound. You get a message across. It's called branding.
But even the way that Chris Moyles did them, I mean, he was kind of taking the mickey out of them quite a lot, wasn't he?
Yes, I guess I would. Chris Moyles take the mickey out of everything.
Tony Blackburn! Tony on Radio 4. Or commenting on Radio 1's no jingle policy.
All day long, Radio Cleveland from the BBC.
This week in 2007, BBC Cleveland adopted its current name of BBC Tees.
This is BBC Tees. Good morning.
The station had launched as Radio Teesside.
On behalf of the people of Teesside, I would like to give a welcome to our own local radio station, BBC Radio Teesside.
The commercial station back then, of course, was Radio Tees.
Here on Radio Tees, 257 metres.
It's all very clear now, isn't it? So happy birthday to the name BBC Tees. This week, 27 years ago, Clyde joined the ranks of those stations splitting their AM from their FM frequencies on a trial basis.
It's 4 o'clock, this is Radio Clyde, and we're going to split and go our separate ways. That means on 102.5 FM and stereo, it's Mike Holloway.
Cheers, Gabe.
Over Strathclyde, this is Clyde FM. Clyde has now split the airwaves. You're in tune with the most exciting commercial radio station.
Clyde splitting at the weekend into Clyde FM and Radio Clyde on AM this week in 88, a precursor to the Clyde 1 and 2 strategy. And that same week, BRMB and Birmingham began evening AM-FM splitting. Robin Vulcan News on BRMB and Oldies on AM. This week in 1972, the last Clitheroe Kid was heard on Radio 2. This sitcom starring Jimmy Clitheroe had become part of British Sunday lunchtimes for 15 years.
We present Jimmy Clitheroe as the Clitheroe Kid with Peter Sinclair, Patricia Burke, Danny Ross and Diana Day in...
Double Trouble!
Where is he?
I've just sent him to the grocer's with my order.
Grandad.
Jimmy, I sent you to the grocer's.
I hope you both have a smashing time, because it's the season of peace on earth and goodwill to all men and little boys.
The Clitheroe Kid, which ended this week 43 years ago. Jimmy was 50 by the time it ended. This week, 8 years ago, the press continued their hounding of Sarah Kennedy for one particular show. She said she'd just had a sore throat.
Of course it's not over. Come on, we're getting on. It's 7 minutes past... Oh, some ungodly hour, 6 o'clock. We have a week. Don't even talk about it. It was a weekend that was very, very busy. I think I'll probably feel much, much better tomorrow.
The wonderful Sarah Kennedy on Radio 2 Earlies this week, 8 years ago. The 14th of August, 1967, is a date imprinted on the minds of most 60s pirate station fans. That was the last day on air for many stations as the new law approached the following day.
Some mention has been made of the fact that mine was the first voice to be heard on Radio London. It will also be the last in regrettably few minutes from now. But before that, please allow me to introduce the managing director of Radio London, Mr. Philip Birch.
It was just 3 years ago this month that the idea for Radio London was born. As one listener put it, the world will get by without Big L, but I'm not sure that it will be a better place.
Philip, of course, went on to launch Piccadilly on land, didn't he? Only one station famously defied that new legislation.
Now is the time to turn on that tape recorder to capture for all time the historic moment when Radio Caroline enters a new phase of broadcasting. Radio Caroline would like to extend its thanks to Mr. Harold Wilson and his Labour government for at last, after over 3.5 years of broadcasting, recognising this station's legality, its right to be here, its right to be broadcasting to Great Britain and the continent, its right to give the music and service to the peoples of Europe, which we have been doing since Easter Sunday 1964. And we in turn recognise your right as our listener to have freedom of choice in your radio entertainment.
Johnny Walker's most famous link ever as Caroline continued this week in 1967. So, with James Naughtie celebrating his 64th birthday...
Well, first up after the news, I'm going to be talking to Jeremy Hunt, the Culture Secretary, about... broadband.
DLT resigning on air 23 years ago.
Am I sorry I left? No. Am I sorry I did it on air? No, not at all.
The death of Radio 4's Robert Robinson 4 years ago.
For some years, I've been unconsciously assuming that God meant newspapers to be tabloid.
The final Cousin Brucey show on WNBC 38 years ago.
Hey, it's 3.5 minutes after 7 o'clock. How, everybody all right? You're washing up, you're keeping clean and everything. I worry about you when I'm not here.
And Jonas, famously at the crease 24 years ago. Years ago.
He hit a four of the wicketkeeper's head, and he was out for nothing. Tough looking.
Those are this week's Radio Moments. Radio
Moments. And that concludes the entertainment for this podcast. Next week, we'll be a long way from the Pims and Gentle Badinage of Test Match Special at the Morning Show Boot Camp.
How long does a presenter get to capture a listener's attention before the listener starts to mentally tune out?
7 seconds.
Graham Mack reports from Chicago next week. This has been a TDC production, and with thanks again to Adam Mountford and to you for listening, this is Troedad whipping off the bales and loping off to the pavilion for a lie down. Ta-da!
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics.